like 8-ish.
It's going live now.
It's Sunday night. It's 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central Standard Time, and you are listening to The Ooze with your hosts, Jason Sorrell and T.C. Downey. And T.C.'s flying pretty high right now, man. How are you doing tonight?
I'm fucking rocking and rolling, dude. How the hell are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Ready to do the show. Although tonight, unfortunately, I haven't really thought of a topic. Although seeing Dark Fool pop in and out of the chat room, giving me some ideas because of his the video he recently posted.
You know what, man? I don't give a shit what anybody else says. Matt is the fucking bomb. For all of his flaws, for all of his downfalls, for all of his fucking bullshit, Matt normally gets shit right. And that is something I cannot say about a lot of other motherfuckers out there.
Right on, right on. And I thought with his video, he did call it like it was. You know, he did point out somebody's hypocrisy. He did point out that there were some issues. And he might have had a little bit of a vendetta going that he needed to deal and everything else. He had a reason for doing what he did and everything. But one of the things I wanted to talk about with his video, he talked about how the Jesus concept, Jesus is happening. The mythical, biblical figure, about how that figure has been portrayed by writers like Stephen Flowers as a left-hand path figure. And I buy into that theory a little bit. And I know it's a stretch, man. It's a real stretch to make that happen, but you can make that case. You can make that argument. Darkpool has kind of a different spin on that. He's pointing out in this video that, you know, it's an allegory basically to the winter solstice, the rising, and the sun basically stalling out for 3 days and then returning. So this is the risen sun, the resurrection. That the 12 disciples are a reference to the zodiac and what have you. And he suggests somehow that, I mean, given that the Jesus concept has, you know, has ties to Mithras and Apollo and all these other sun gods. He says that in and of itself makes this Jesus idea not a left-hand path idea. And since he's in the chat room, if he has a chance to call in, I'd kind of like him to expand on that because I, for whatever reason, I know he only had a few minutes to do the video, but I wasn't able to make the connection between what he was saying as this is the evidence and how that evidence applies to his argument. So that said.
Right on. Well, I guess we'll wait for Matt to call in, man. But in the meantime, I want to say there was a video done by Jason King sometime around this time last year where he got really in detail about beating somebody with a fucking spiked baseball bat. And what I didn't realize at the time that he was making this video is that he was actually making some parallel reference to Matt's most recent video. Because Matt most certainly did some beating with the spiked baseball bat. So hopefully he'll call in and go ahead and connect the dots for us.
And if you haven't seen this latest video, maybe Matt will drop a link in the chat room or what have you. Matt's calling a prominent figure on the internet as far as, you know, the occult and our little dealings and everything else. He's calling him out on his hypocrisy. This is a guy who, you know, everybody knows him. Basically, he's been poo-pooing Christianity, which, you know, that's all fine and good. He talks about how, you know, Christianity and Satanism are related and are basically corrupt and what have you. He's also mentioned that with his philosophy, there's no middle ground. There's no compromise. It's you either go all the way or you don't go at all, which is a very, you know, that's a hardline stance that I can appreciate. I can understand that. The problem is that as opposed as he is to Christianity as a form of expression or what have you, as much as he is about his own messiahship and his own power and his own ability to do and be as he wills himself to be, he finds himself involved in a baptism of his child to satisfy his, you know, Catholic wife and Catholic, you know, in-laws and everything else. And which, you know, personally, I wouldn't have a problem with that. Would not have a problem at all with somebody saying, you know, hey, look, these are the things I believe in, but to keep peace in my household and to I don't have to believe in this shit. I can just walk through the fucking function. I could show up in the church, go through the function, do my thing, and still be me at the end of the day. I understand that. The problem is, of course, as Darkpool, you know, Elderpoint points out, basically, that this guy has been so adamant about other people's being willing to compromise, so adamant about how he has his shit in control or his shit in check, and he's the example for the rest of us to follow in many ways, it's hypocrisy. And it just calls to the table the level of bullshit this guy's got going on in his life. But that wasn't where I wanted to focus, because I could really give a shit about, you know, what that guy's got going on or not going on. But that's the video, so check that out. And it looks like we got Matt on the line here. 661 area code, you're on the use. What's on your brain, man?
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, gentlemen.
Hey. How you been, man?
Outside. Good. Outside, chilling with the Sam Adams Winter Lager. And I'm ready to do this, man. So what you got for me?
Well,
that's the fucking bath, dude. That's what I got.
What's that?
I said connect the fucking dots. That's what I got.
Nice. Thank you.
Well, I really I dug your video. I checked it out and everything else, dug the video. And you know what? As far as, you know, Derek and Court, you know, Vendor Satanis and Coruscant or whatever, I could give a shit what they got going on. You know, Caden concluded a long time ago that in many ways they're full of shit and not worth the attention. What caught my attention about your video was your argument that, as you know, Stephen Flowers, who's an author we both respect, has presented the idea that Jesus Christ is a left-hand path figure. You disagreed with that, and you presented some evidence, and you suggested that the Zodiac, you know, allegory and everything else suggests that Jesus is not a left-hand path figure, and, of course, the connection with, you know, all these other sun gods who follow that same line of thinking. It's all tied related to the Zodiac and the transit of the sun in the night sky, apparently, over the course of the year. What about that information he presented makes him or disqualifies him as a left-hand path figure?
Well, simply because, in my opinion, I see him as a personification of the constellation. You know what I mean? Now there are teachings, you know, like, for example, you know, like love thy enemy as thy neighbor and stuff like that. The other, when it comes to the philosophical aspect of it too, I also don't think that that makes him a leader of the left-hand path, because if you look at it, like, I mean, Jesus gets up on a cross and he crucifies himself. I mean, he could have led this rebellion against, you know, the Pharisees. He could have seen it out to its conclusion and could have stayed around. And he could have harbored some of that glory for himself, you know, since it's all about the self. But he presented it to the Father. He went outside of himself, you know. And I don't think that someone necessarily of the left-hand path would – I mean, like – the self is included. That's kind of one of the themes of the left-hand path. So, I mean, he gave of himself completely on the cross philosophically when he died. But as far as the personification goes of the constellation, you know, that's another aspect altogether of something entirely. I mean, it's an allegory for the sun's crossing into the constellations, going through the you know, at the time they thought that the sun was the one traveling, when we later found out it was the earth. So it's symbolic of the sun going through these different houses and these different these different aeons, these different ages. Like right now we are in the aeon of Pisces, and the next one is coming up, the aeon of Aquarius, which, you know, there's biblical references even to that. So does that make a little bit of sense?
How does that disqualify him as a left-hand path? The philosophy part I understand. And, you know, but it's the zodiac thing I'm having trouble going, okay, how does that relate to him being left-hand path or not left-hand path?
Well, simply because it's, I don't know how I can explain this anymore. It's like, okay, I have right here a statue. Let's say it's a pig statue, and I'm going to relate that to a constellation. And I'm going to write this story about, you know, I'm just going to interweave the story, you know, like as this pig goes throughout his journey, he goes north. That represents, oh, I don't know, when the sun goes north. You know what I mean? You're just tying in all of these things together. And all you're doing is you're basically weaving in hidden knowledge into this story that only initiates would know. You know what I mean? And as far as that being left-hand path or not left-hand path, the best way to say it is that it's basically describing something that is neither left-hand or right-hand path.
Okay, okay. So
it's something
completely different. That's right. So, yeah, and that was the part that I kind of that was lost on me, was that, you know, I'm listening to you talk about, you know, the Jesus, you know, being an allegorical figure for the zodiac, a representation that, you know, these other sun gods are also represented. And that part of it, I was like, well, you know, a lot of these other sun gods you're talking about are self-indulgent, you know, the sun being the brightest thing in the sky, it's, you know, prideful and everything else. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I didn't get the connection. So I'm following you. Now, the idea of self-immolation or whatever, you know, total. Go ahead.
Philosophically, Jesus gets even more interesting, because there's research that points to a possible, a very strong possible connection that Jesus Christ, Jesus being the title meaning anointed one, well, there was only one anointed one during that time, and that anointed one was Julius Caesar. So there is a huge, especially when you look at Jesus saying, love thine enemy as thy neighbor, and then you see Julius Caesar taking over his enemies and giving them, you know, putting them in positions. You know, you see these different things that Julius Caesar said and hold them up against what Jesus said, and they're almost identical as well. So philosophically, it even gets even more interesting.
Right on. Have you read the Secret Life of Lucifer?
Actually, no, I have not read that.
That book deals a lot with the life of Jesus Christ and some other connections that John the Baptist and was part of a cult or a religious a religious effort that Mary Magdalene herself was a priestess of, and that Jesus came on the scene and he was simply a better orator than John the Baptist. So he was better at talking to people, a little bit more charismatic. And there was a rivalry between the two of them, but that both of them pursued a left-hand path kind of philosophy. Jesus is dying on the cross was simply that he got rid of John the Baptist, you know, through some political maneuvering, and then he himself got busted basically by the powers that be. And the rivalry that ends up being set up between the person referred to as Simon Magus and Peter represented these two different, you know, philosophical views. Peter embracing a more altruistic version of the teachings, and Simon Magus being embracing the core structure of the teaching, which is very left-hand path. And it's an interesting book, so check that out. But yeah, I was just curious as to where you were going with the video. So I guess while I'm thinking about this, so you make this video about Avenger Satanis and Coruscant. And it's, I know there's some things going on, man. So, what was it? Everybody saw the picture. I think everybody who's connected to him on Facebook saw the picture. It's, you know, it's Derek in a church with his in-laws, with his wife, with his baby, and she has been baptized in whatever that religion is, Catholicism, whatever it is.
Yeah.
What was your reasoning? I mean, why did you want to step up and say, you said you were motivated. I think you expressed your motivations pretty well in the video. I wonder if you could go into that a little bit too, as to what it was. Like, why do you give a shit, basically, about what's going on with Derek?
Well, actually, I don't. See, that's the thing, is that I didn't escalate this. I saw this picture on Facebook. Here's the one thing. I've always had a problem with Facebook. And in fact, that's one of the reasons I almost left and went to Google Plus until I realized there was a big, a tumbleweed going through Google Plus. And I was like, well, I better go back to Facebook. The point of social networks is that everybody's there, no matter if you like it or not, you know? And Facebook has a lot of issues, and this one in particular is a lot of people can just add you into the groups without your consent. Like, at least in the MySpace days, you would get, like, notifications like, hey, would you like to join this group? Click yes or no, you know? And so I found myself, Coruscant put me in this, secular hangout group, which the banner happens to be the pentagram that you made, which I think is freaking awesome. So there was I was in the secular hangout. Before I knew it, I was getting notifications like, what the hell is this? Oh, I'm in this. Oh, okay, whatever. And then somebody had already posted, this guy named Reverend something or other, I forgot his name escapes me at the moment, but he had posted this and he had said, this isn't, satanic, or this isn't, Cthulhu cult. This isn't, this sucks. So what the hell's going on here? And then I chimed in on this and I said, when I saw that picture, I was like, I couldn't hold it in. I just said, this screams pwned on every level, and I left it on Facebook. I left the fight on Facebook. I just let it go. Coruscant took snapshots of what I said and put it on the Cthulhu wall. And so I was like, what the fuck? And then she was like, she comes back and she's like, oh, look, Venger called you out, which he did. In that first clip I took of his own words, where you see it in picture form, it's like, dark fool, why don't you confront me in my face? I was like, all right, fine, I'll step up to the plate. I'll step up to the plate. Thing is how I was dragged into this. Fuck it. So that's how it all started.
So this is basically just an escalation of an ongoing issue. Okay, so was it? Yeah. So I didn't think it was unilateral. You kind of indicated that there was something going on between the two or three of you.
For one thing, I had cut ties. I was at the same time. I realized what was coming ahead. Like, I'm super busy nowadays. I started realizing I wasn't going to have time for the radio show as a co-host, and I started realizing that. I needed to get rid of certain figures in my life. So I was like, all right, well, I might as well do this all in one fell swoop. This sucks, but I think it has to be done. So I did that. And Avenger Derek just got all kinds of butthurt. And he was just like, what the hell? What's up with this whole cutting all ties? I was like, dude, calm down, dude. I wish you luck on your merry way. Cheers, or whatever. And he just couldn't let it go. So a lot of it was resentment on his end. And that's it, as far as I know.
Right on. Okay. So,
that's good. I'm sorry. It's kind of fascinating to me that... Go ahead, Jason.
Go ahead, dude. No, go ahead, man. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I want to hear TC.
I was just going to ask...
Time out. TC, you go first.
I'm going to hear. What I was saying, I was just going to kind of chuckle because... It seems like, right about this time you decided that it was time to focus on your own shit, which is, excuse me if I'm wrong, but isn't that ultimately what the left-hand path is about, is focusing on your own shit? That at that same time you were, telling the news, hey, I can't do this, and Venger, hey, get off my nuts, and I want to do my own thing. And in the end, this whole thing leading up to here is that.
Well, yeah, definitely. That's what it boils down to. I came to the realization. In fact, you did too. We even discussed this, that a lot of people didn't feel that, I was satanic enough, and there was this whole issue with, you didn't mention any names. It was all speculation, but I could definitely see your point. Dionysianism has mixtures of both right and left, what people would consider right and left-hand paths. So I just, that is pretty much my own thing. the way I would personally describe what I'm doing is, you know, utilizing right-hand path techniques to reach left-hand path goals.
Right on. Right on. So with all that said, Matt, man, Jason, go ahead.
I was going to say, and I'd rather talk about that. The video was cool, you know, 15 minutes of, you know, more slamming on an easy target. I dug it. Somebody had to say it, man, so I'm glad you did. But with what you got going on with your project and everything else, how are things going? And that's the best thing right there, using right-hand path techniques, right-hand path processes to attain left-hand path goals. I want to know if you could expand on that a little bit.
Well, within our niche, within our clique, if you will, that's putting it in simplified terms, within the left-hand path, a lot of people have an aversion to organizing and hierarchies and that sort of thing, which is actually, it's funny, because that's actually where Venger and I bonded on a lot of things, you know, and originally what I was thinking was to have, because I am going to form a cult. I will have my own cult, my own little Dionysian cult. And what we aim to do is, group together. We're talking the whole type of collection plate thing. It's more like an investment. When you put in an investment on yourself. Now, I realize that it could easily steer in that corrupt way. But, you know, that's the thing. We never claimed to be perfect, did we? I understand. See, this is where Venger and I agree on certain things. There needs to be, like, hierarchies. There needs to be structure, et cetera, et cetera. We need to unite, unification, that sort of thing. But I kind of let that sense override other things. I kind of let a lot of shit slip when I had this goal of, like, uniting. Like, he has his Cthulhu cult, and I have my own cult, which will happen one day. Can't say when, but I was kind of thinking, well, maybe we can unite the two and, like, get this, you know, big thing going on. But, you know, then I started thinking, you know, a friend of mine sat me down, and I started thinking, wait, you know, he has kind of plagiarized his own Bible from Wikipedia. That's pretty ridiculous. And this is before even the takeover of the ONA. And so I was like, yeah, I'll pass. So that's how that went down. That's why I said, you know what, I better cut the ties.
Right on. Well, I don't know if you've been kind of following what's been going on with the different groups you've been associated with, InSin and everything else. There is a movement, and there's a number of different people who are involved in it. You've got this new 3.0 thing that's it's related to, or, you know, maybe founded on the principles of the ONA, but it's a group of people who are looking to make some shit happen.
References on their site. I saw a couple of the Guy Fawkes masks and 4chan anonymous references.
All right, so they're not reaching out to everybody, but they're kind of the, I would call it the, you know, they're aligned with the core of what is the Occupy movement, what is the Anonymous movement, which is a very anti-system, anti-status quo kind of effort. And it's, you know, it seems to be a group of, you know, individuals who are motivated. They're following their own projects and they're doing their own thing, but they're starting to coordinate what it is they got going on. They're starting to do different things to kind of build on each other's successes. And I didn't know if that was something that that interested you, or you looked into it or not, or what your thoughts on all that were.
Well, like I said, I've been really busy recently, like in my personal life. I have noticed things going down. I haven't looked too far into it to form an opinion as of yet. But, here's the thing. If you're going to get that kind of organization going, you better have some leadership, or at least some sort of structure of some really clear form of communication. Because other than that, the whole thing could just be plain chaos, and that could detract from what it is, you know, you intentionally wanted to do. Like, look, for example, look at what happened with the occupiers, especially in L.A. It's like a lot of people look at the occupiers now and they don't have as much respect because they don't command as much respect. There's not what, you know, people go up to them and ask, well, what do you want? And they say, well, this, you know, the powers that be are wrong. They need to take pay cuts. It's like, well, do you have any clear plan or any kind of system of how you would work with authorities to get that back. Well, no. So, I mean, there's no clear-cut plan. There's no clear-cut way. It's just a bunch of people that are pissed off. Rightly so. I'm not going to deny that. But the fact that there's a bit of that incoherence, you know, that detracts from, you know, what might possibly be a good beneficial movement.
Right. Well, the cats that I'm seeing, the things that I've been observing, they don't have a leadership per se, and actually they eschew the kind of structural idea.
Right.
The structure, you know, is going to hold them back. But communication, they're definitely all about. And they're communicating not just, you know, not only directly, but indirectly with one another and indirectly with the public. And it becomes more about the idea rather than, you know, any kind of structure or organization. So they're taking things in a different direction, and they're actually starting to accomplish some things. They're not the Occupy movement like you see it on TV or whatever. They're not, you know, they're not these hippies or whatever that are hanging out and going, oh, we want a free education or whatever. As a matter of fact, from what I understand, they're rarely themselves on film or anything else. But they're kind of at the, you know, at like I said, at the center of the storm, kind of motivating people to do things that help slow down the system, help expend certain tax dollars and things like that. We got another caller online. Let me go ahead and bring him on real quick. 631 area code, you're on the use. It's on your brain, man.
Hey, what's up? Yeah, I kind of agree a lot with the Occupy movement. I'm here in New York, and to me, I've explained to people that it's orchestrated from the beginning. I mean, a lot of people are rightfully angry, but it's not doing anything. You know, one of the guys came out that isn't with them, and he said, you know, more of a revolution would be if everybody stopped paying their college loan. You know, that would that would break them. But you see, the whole Occupy movement is fake. It's more propaganda. And the really hard part to see is that it's being done by real people that don't know it's orchestrated. These people are really protesting. They really are out there. But there's a lot of infiltrators. There's a lot of cops in the crowd that look like civilians. They've been tagging people. It's just, I explained to them, it's like, the most powerful nonviolent weapon people have is the boycott. You know, if they would have not bought any turkeys, you know, not celebrated the holidays, and just it would have shut it down. That's real power. But we live in a culture that's like immensely fake. I mean, school is just pumps the ego up. It's a fashion show. The music is all bullshit now.
Oh, God, don't get me started.
Yeah, you know, and it's like I look at this, I see teenagers walking, I mean, the pants hanging on the ass, you know, and I have nothing against it. It's not a racial thing or anything, you know, because I'm a man of color in America, and, you know, I look at that and I'm like, what? It's just ridiculous. It's really ridiculous, but it comes from not being real with ourselves. I mean, it comes from mistakenly calling the place a country when by definition of action, it's a criminal enterprise, just like Canada, just like, you know, Mexico. Every place that has been raped outside of Asia, you know, is just it's criminals, and we expect, you know, justice, which just shows the mind wrenching crap. Because if somebody's bullying you in school, you don't ask him to stop bullying you. You know it doesn't work. You have to either appeal to the interest or use something.
Or fight back, yeah, and win.
Yeah, fight back is definitely one option. Like right now when you look at it, you know, if you fight these guys back, they're going to get crushed. They're going to whip out the tanks. They're going to do some Tiananmen Square shit. I mean, it's already there. The infection has grown so bad that the only thing I can really think is what Minister Fuller, he had a quote. He said, the only way to get rid of something that you don't like is to build a better model that's so advanced it makes the current one obsolete. But nobody wants to do that. Everybody wants to sit around, get drunk, get high, talk shit, and not do it. You know?
Yeah, I definitely saw protesters in the crowd that it looked like a desperate wannabe reaching back into the 60s, and I was like, no. And if you look at it, that's what sparked Satanism, because that was, you know, what are you in between, the conservatives and the hippies? Who came out in between? Anton LaVey.
Yeah, yeah. It has gotten, if you look at the 60s stuff and the 70s, and then you look at now, they tweak the machine. I mean, when I was growing up as a kid in the late 70s and a teenager in the 80s, it was a lot better. And, you know, music was better. You know, people listen to music and they're like, wow, I wish I grew. I said, man, it was beautiful, man. I said, actually, music was about dancing. It was about laughing, having fun. I mean, it was good songs with meaning. And if you look at the music today, it's sad. There's a lot of homosexual innuendos. I have nothing against a person that's homosexual, but mass homosexuality is population control.
You know, I can just wrap up everything you said with just two words: Justin Bieber.
Yeah. You hit it on the button, and it's so funny because he's the new prostitute.
He's Usher's
little
bitch.
Yeah, he's the new pedophilic icon for a sick, demented fucking place. I mean, Krishnamurti had the greatest quote. He said, "It is no sign of health to be well-adjusted to a profoundly sick society." And that's what we see. People who, you know, they wear their suits. You know, and I look at that. I tell somebody, the suit, the collar, a dog wears a collar. And the tie is the leash. So anybody who has a suit, one thing people destroying have in the world have in common, they all wear suits.
I noticed that.
Yeah, you know, so you look at it, it's really, nobody can tell me when they wear a suit, they're comfortable. They're a lying piece of shit if they tell me, oh, I'm comfortable in a suit. No, you're not. You're comfortable in sweatpants, you're comfortable in shorts, you're comfortable in a T-shirt. You are not. I see guys in the summer, and I laugh at them. I say, man, you must make $1 million to wear that suit in 100-degree weather. People don't think. School did its job.
With the Occupy movement, guys, you guys point out two different groups that are involved in the Occupy movement. You got what I would refer to as the ideologues. You got these wannabe hippies. You got these people that think if they're going to reach out, they reach out to the system and appeal to the humanity of these politicians, that the politicians will listen to reason and they'll get some things. They'll get some entitlements. They'll get some, you know, some benefits, some assistance. So that's one group that's involved in the Occupy movement. The second group you guys mentioned are the politicos, the bureaucrats, the people that see these movements and these kinds of things as a means of political leverage to make things go one way or another for their particular parties, these people being used. But there's a third element there that I don't think you guys are recognizing, because you're talking about what is this movement doing, what are they accomplishing. There's a third movement that has no interest in any kind of, you know, scoring points with either political party, and has no interest in actually getting anything from the system. They're more interested in seeing the system torn down. And those people are using the Occupy movement as a means to simply disrupt the normal flow of commerce and what have you. When you talk about hundreds of thousands into the millions and billions of tax dollars being spent on police overtime, being spent on maintaining these properties these people are involved in, being spent on, you know, in media coverage and everything else, we're talking about the dollars and cents that these people are basically pulling away from the system, then you could sit there and say that this Occupy movement is actually serving a purpose. It's just not the stated purpose that you see these people talking about on television, nor is it the purpose of these politicians that are looking to use it for their own advantage.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, it really, looking deep, it's not doing what it should be doing. It's doing a lot of other things, and here in New York, you know, it's real deep. I mean, in Brooklyn, they're arresting people, and I tell people, I say, I'm not going to go out there, period, because I know the reality. I mean, I see it. It's like throwing a rock at a wall. They're throwing a rock at a wall and expecting, you know, the wall to change. I mean, appealing to the humanity of politicians that aren't even human. I mean, you look at their actions, it's like you're more of an animal than a human being. You know, from the laws that they pass, the people that follow them. The real revolution what they don't realize, it's not going to be televised. It's not going to be on the internet. It's going to be when people say, you know what, Christmas, it's going to be a ghost town. It's going to be tumbleweeds when you look into any of these stores. It's going to be to where our kids aren't going to schools. Teenagers smile every time I tell them, hey, quit school today. And they say, well, you know, my friends.
I have yet to meet one teenager that would disagree with that, unless at least American teenagers.
Well, yeah. Well, you see, when a teenager quits high school, because you know, I used to be a homeschooling teacher, you know, and I used to, you know, just give kids curriculums and what to say to adults, because a lot of people that call themselves adults aren't. They're immature grown-ups. If you look at the actions, they're very immature. They're very violent. They yell. They scream. There's no maturity in that. So we're in a society that is with a bunch of fake adults, a bunch of people that act like big children. Young children are actually more mature, and teenagers are just lost. So, like, when teenagers, I see them, you know, asking for money for the basketball team and all that, I said, you know what, go play ball in the park. Screw that. Become an apprentice for, say, carpentry, plumbing, electricity, something where you make cash and you start to apply.
This is why I choose computer technician repair, that sort of thing, is because, you know, as a side job, is because that is a trade. These days, if you want to make it or if you want to survive, you got to, you know, make it in a trade, you know, because the market is just dead, almost dead as a doornail.
Yeah, you got to have a skill, you know. College is a scam unless you're going for medical. And even a lot of people that I know, their girlfriends went to become nurses, and they're still looking for jobs 3, 4, 5 months out of college. And the high school, see, the schooling system was created for this. When I explain it to teenagers, I let them know, look, it was created to kill you and spare the person, to kill the inner person and make you an automaton. By the time you get out of high school, you got three avenues. It's either going to be jail, the military, or corporate labor. And you got a few what I call lottery winners, the ones that, you know, might get an okay job. And, you know, and then that's what people look at. Oh, well, you know, you go to high school. If you're really lost, you'll sentence yourself to another 4 years of college. Because it's really – school is very reminiscent of, like, prison settings. And it does come from the fallen state of Prussia's school system, America's school system, and Japan's school system. Japan is just robots. So looking into the agenda of it, hopefully people will wake up. You know, because it takes that understanding and then checking it. I tell people, okay, English. I assume that you guys you know about 1984, George Orwell, Brave New World, Aldous Huxley.
Correct.
All right.
Sure. I don't mean to cut you off, but some of the co-hosts I kind of heard interjecting. But if you hold that thought for a minute.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Yeah, I was just going to ask real quick. You mentioned you know, some sort of ban, like not being involved, not engaging in the holidays, not participating in the in commerce during the holidays or what have you. My question would be, why wait till the holidays?
You're exactly right, and that's a beautiful point. Why wait? The holidays is more crushing, but definitely keep it going on Buy Nothing Day every day. And, I mean, disrupt it to the point, but definitely have a model, because I tell people that want to just break the system and stuff like that, that's like quitting your job before you get a new one. It's like selling the car before you already acquired a new one. So you can't just break the system and not have a model that's better to replace it with. It will be chaos.
What would you suggest? I mean, there are people, like, in my mind, I prefer chaos. So,
well,
what
chaos,
would you
the only problem with chaos is right now we're actually, when we look at it maturely, we're still a little protected. Chaos is going to be whoever's got guns and weapons, there's going to be constant beef. You know, it's going to be a lot of
chaos. Of the Middle East, basically.
It's going to be Bosnia. Yeah, it's going to be – and that you know, you look at it, you say, you know what we have now, then you start to say, wow, it ain't that bad. So if, you know, when we use our imagination and extrapolate on what would actually happen, you know, we would say, you know what, these guys that we're dealing with, you got to remember, if you win on the ground, they'll fly up in the air and nuke this motherfucker. They ain't letting you have that shit. We're dealing with a different type of animal that has genocided the native inhabitants, enslaved people from other continents, including Europe. A lot of people don't know that there was a lot of white slaves in the 1600s, but they made it all black because when a white guy ran away, you couldn't find him. He'd blend into society. So they kept it to where it was something that you can visually see. And it, you know, you're dealing with this mentality. How you think that is going to have mercy? They are going to crush. They are already poisoning people, you know, through the food.
My question was, what system would you use to replace it?
To replace this would have to be people working together, and it's really tough. They would have to work together and say, you, I, another couple of people, we say, all right, we're gonna get a place together. That will immediately reduce our bills. Land. Every revolution is based on land. I mean, Malcolm X said it. Many of the other people said it. You got to have land. And when you have land, you got to get into growing food to where you don't have to always depend on somebody for your food, because the definition of freedom is independent, untethered. So when you're dependent on turning a water faucet on for water, that's not freedom. That's that you're enslaved for them to have water. So the basic necessities is what we need to understand. Okay, how do we purify water? How do we have a reservoir? Because in California, they're doing this a lot. They're having communities. But the scary part is the government is cracking down on them. They just have
solar power. That's another one.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's solar power. It's got to be to where we can't just, you know, do it stupidly. Because you'll get crushed, or you'll be, you know, living in a cardboard box or something like that.
In this model you described, where people come together and they start working together, they share common resources, they grow their own food, they figure out how to purify their own water and what have you. Do you end up with independent villages? Do you end up with city states?
Yeah.
Do you end up with nations? What do you end up with?
Well, you'll end up with independent villages that will grow into independent cities. And when the people work together and meet another group of people work together, it's more of cooperation instead of when they meet the one group trying to dominate, conquer, and destroy the other group, because they already know how to work with somebody together. So it will grow. This is what they fear. If you really look at it, the biggest thing they fear is people working together. There's like,
right.
I remember
right.
An old parody of heaven and hell. And, you know, I'm not really religious or anything, but they said people are sitting around a big bowl of soup, but they got these long spoons to where when you pick up the soup, there's no way you're going to get it to your mouth because it reaches across to the other side, and that's hell. And in heaven, it's the same exact thing. But people, when they pick up the soup, they feed the person across from them, and the person across from them feeds us. So we must help each other. Somebody said something about Martin Luther in there. Martin Luther said something about we're either going to have to live together as brothers and sisters, or we will perish together as fools. And this is so true. I mean, anybody, the Klan could have said that. It's just a true statement. And that's what people don't want. I tell them, end the Occupy movement so you guys can go back to just ignoring the homeless. And people get all, you know, offended. I'm like, yeah, that's right. You know, it's like you got homeless people out the yin-yang in your face in Manhattan, and they're over here feeding Occupy people. It's ironic. It's anything but helping another human being, anything beside that. And that really is the answer, to help each other and to build villages and to build them because you know you're going to get attacked. You know they're going to be you know, sending shit. That's what they do to all organizations. They send infiltrators. They'll sell you drugs masquerading as foods. You know, when you look at anything processed with sugar, it's basically a drug. Just look at how a kid acts in a supermarket. That's not a kid being spoiled. that's a kid exhibiting a drug addiction withdrawal, because children are still real. They haven't been taught to be as fake as we are as adults, to hide your addictions and try to play it cool and lie about that you're not addicted to sugar or coffee or something like that. They're like, nah, fuck that. Buy that shit for me right now. And they exhibit a drug addiction tantrum. And the parent, of course, most of them being fake as they are, will say, oh, he's misbehaving. No, he's not misbehaving. He's getting withdrawal from the sugar craps you fed him like for the last year. The kid wants his drug.
So, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around this model, because what you've described, you know, a group of people coming together, they work together for the common benefit, mm-hmm. and then another group that's also working together for common benefit, they encounter one another and they begin working in tandem for the common benefit, and this increases. Now, if you're in Village A and you encounter Village B. And Village B has a different way of doing things. They have a different set of values. But you decide you're going to work together. Village A and Village B are going to start working together. They're going to start to intermingle, marry, you know, among one another and everything else. So down the road, eventually, Village A, Village B, they're going to have to come to a decision as to which of, you know, if they have a sticking point, an ideological sticking point, some religion. They're going to come to the conclusion as to which religion, which model benefits them. Which means that if you don't agree with that model, you no longer have – you don't have a – or you may have a say, but you've been asked to sit down and shut up about what it is you want to do. So what you're describing, as ideal as it sounds, mm-hmm. also sounds to me like the exact same way we ended up where we are today as it is. These ideals are some of the ideals that our nation was founded on, that we'll all work together for our common benefit, for the mutual good. But
yeah,
when you talk
only
about, again, when you talk about Village A and Village B – working together, if Village B looks at Village A, and Village A is further up the river, and Village B goes, you know what, we need the water resources that Village A is holding back, they're damming and everything else, for their energy. We need those water resources for our crops. Village B can go to Village A and go, hey, let's work out some sort of deal and hope it works out, or Village B can go kick some ass and wipe out Village A and take those resources. And I'm afraid to say this, but while ideally it'd be wonderful if the two could work together, rationally, the most logical thing to do is to go there, wipe out the other people that have the resources you want, and take what you need. That's the rational, logical way to do things, and that's human nature.
No,
so,
no, it's not human nature. It's what we've been taught to think human nature is, because we've been brought up in this barbarism. What you said about the nation being founded on that, the nation was never founded. It was a criminal enterprise disguised as a nation. It was founded on theft, murder, rape, and exploitation. And if we're not honest with ourselves about that, that's when it won't work. We have to be honest.
So when you say founded, I'm not talking about the founding of the nation as far as the people that were in Philadelphia or what have you. I'm talking about the individual communities from state to state, the individual communities that formed the territories that agreed to work together. That's what I'm talking about. Those people bought into that system. So, and when we're talking about barbarism, there is more of an effort in our schools today to teach people to get along, to ignore differences, to compromise than have ever in our history before. Whereas for thousands of years, we existed as what you call barbarity, fighting for what you can have. You keep what you can hold on to, and if somebody's strong enough to take it away from you, well, you didn't deserve to have it. It's social Darwinism, and
actually,
it makes more sense than its ideology.
Look at
actually,
what it led,
if I can,
led to
if
the
I
situation that
here,
we're in now.
If I could interject here really quick,
yeah,
gentlemen, when it comes to the school system and when it comes to the whole anti-bullying thing, I just see it may be anti-bullying, but what it really is promoting is pro-victimization, pro-victimhood. I mean, it's not just in the school system. You look around, everybody's like, oh, well, you know, I've been victimized because nobody told me that Zoloft had these side effects, so I'm entitled to blah, blah, blah. Or you know what, so-and-so said something mean about me. I'm a victim. And then they just,
totally
you know,
understand.
A lot of people feed off of that.
That's why we've been kept in a perpetual state of immaturity. And that's why we can't figure it out. There's only a few people that have reached maturity to think like that, and there's hordes of mindless zombies. Religion is a tool, is one of the best mind control tools ever created. And you're right. when if the individual villages get religious, that will destroy it. That's what keeps us divided and conquered. Religion, any type of ism, instead of understanding your individuality and respecting the differences between each other. That brings growth. If you can't, if village A and village B are very different, well, you don't have to intermingle and grow, you know, together with them. You can have your own sovereignty away from them. But as you see, America goes around the planet destroying sovereignty, and now, of course, they're saying, well, you know, we'll take America's sovereignty away and we'll join it with Canada and Mexico, make the superhighways, because there aren't really individual countries when you look at it. There is a one-world government already, and it has been here. There's no new world order. It's the old world order. World War One started in 1492 and never ended. It never ended. Looking at things from a different mindset is extremely important to making this change. It's probably not going to happen. I'll be honest about that because and they know this. They're ingenious. If you don't respect the intelligence they have, you definitely get crushed. They are immensely intelligent and have above genius level tactics to keep us enslaved. Just look up the words, the definition. What does the word government mean? Govern means to restrict, to limit, to hold back. Ment comes from the Latin word mente, meaning mind. To restrict the mind, to limit the mind, to hold back the mind. People say, we need a new government. What, we need a new mind limiter? They don't even know what the fuck they're talking about. Entertainment. Entertain means to divert, to hold the attention of. Ment, of course, mind. What does entertainment do? It does. It diverts, it distracts the mind. They don't even know. People do not know the definitions of the English words that they're speaking. So that gives you a good grasp on just how, I don't like, you know, don't want to call them retarded or anything like that, but it just shows you how much of a lack of understanding that people have, just how lost they are. And that's where I'm like, wow, man, there's very few people that you can even have conversations like this with.
Now, real quick, guys, because we got about 7 minutes from the top of the hour, and I actually was intending for the show to just be a one-hour show tonight. TC, are you still on the line, man?
I'm here, man. I'm loving 613, man. Or 631, rather. I think you got some good insight, man, and it's been refreshing to hear that shit.
Thanks, bro.
So, do you want to carry on through the second hour? Because I'm going to drop off either way.
Jason, I don't see any reason why you have to hang out. And if these dudes want to hatch this out, let's do this.
Right on, man. Right on. Okay, so well, then what I'm gonna do real quick, since we are getting ready to hit an impasse here. And dude, 631, the 631 air code, I don't want you to think I don't agree with you.
I'm happy with that, man. If you agree with everything I say, then we're not thinking for ourselves. It's good to not agree with everything. It's definitely but I'm glad you see the point of it.
It's the ideal versus what I see as the real. Like you said, I would love for everybody to wake up tomorrow and go, hey, we all need to start working together. We all need to start working for each other's mutual benefit. That would be awesome. But in the meantime, either that kind of thing is going to be enforced artificially, as our government is attempting to do in many ways, or it's going to be the reality of you got to be very careful who you choose to deal with and who you trust, mm-hmm. and be prepared for other people to respond in that immature, childlike manner that any other animal would. So while I can appreciate everything you're saying, don't think I was, I didn't want you to think I was being overly critical. Now, we got a commercial I'm going to roll real quick here, and then I'm going to let TC handle the hosting duties, and I'll be dropping off. So I'm going to do that. So gather your thoughts, gentlemen, and I'll go ahead and roll a commercial.
Creative Oddity Studios. Creative Oddity Studios. Stickers, T-shirts, skateboard decks, lighters, prints, posters, and many other fine pieces of merchandise. It's some of the best damn artwork you'll find on the internet. The creative assault and meandering of Jason Sorrell, T.C. Downey, and Vanessa Lee. Coleman! What is best in life? Because you enemies. them driven before you. And visit Creative Oddity Studios. Bondage art, digital manipulation, erotica, demon girls, fantasy, tattoo art, horror, occult, and we dare to call it artwork.
It's like candy, but for your eyes!
Check out our very popular books on the occult and Satanism, now available in hard copy and downloadable format.
Hoo-wah!
Check out our blogs on art, tattoo work, what life is like as a tattoo artist, social issues, philosophy, lowbrow culture in Austin, Texas, and eminentmind.info. You'll enjoy them.
If you can read!
Creative Oddities Studios. www.creativeoddityestudios.com.
I like the naked girls.
Creative Oddities Studios.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, dude. I'm dropping off, man. You guys have a good night.
I got
you too, Jeff. All right, brilliant audio done by Jason Sorrell. But what I'm curious about, 631, is what, in your opinion, is the end game here? Because, I mean, it doesn't matter what philosophical meanderings you have that support whatever ideology you got going on. The end game itself is, I think, what's important.
Mm-hmm. Well, like the other gentleman spoke about, it would be nice if tomorrow woke up and it worked, but actually, you know, he's right. The reality of it is that it's probably not going to happen. I mean, we have to become, it's kind of like one of the Einstein quotes where you can't solve a problem with the same level of intelligence you had when you realized it. So we are actually going to have to become extremely more intelligent, not just a little more, to solve this problem. So it might really involve learning a lot about what's going on and how to actually create sustainability. A lot of Americans are actually living outside of America. I mean, this is like probably the most in American history. People are going to France. People are going to many different continents because they see the shit hitting the fan. When 9/11 happened, you had a lot of Jewish people going back to Germany and to Europe saying this is exactly what happened during World War II. I mean, it's serious. I mean, remember, it's nothing wrong with being paranoid. The paranoid Jews were the ones that got out of Germany. So if you're paranoid and you want to go somewhere, that might actually be an all right idea. To stay here, it's going to take a lot of courage and you know, I get worried at times for the people that I care about, you know, because I say, wow, man, I'm not smart enough yet to think my way out of this and to help others.
Right on, man. I completely feel everything you're saying, but what I'm asking you is what is the end game? In your mind, ideal situation, what is the end game? How does this all resolve itself?
Yeah. All right. The end game that will resolve it for me is for a lot of us who are working class to make allegiances with people that have more right now, like in higher positions, people, millionaires, you know, it doesn't have to be famous people with pull and people that have a common interest. To say, yeah, man, look, you don't want this to be Bosnia or Middle East or something like that. You know, we're going to have to work together, and probably it won't be the United States. It'll be the states because it won't be united. You know, the states are going to have to leave the union and create their own individual sovereignty. And that, the end game for that will actually, you know, could actually work. Is to have that, is to get people who have power that see it happening and say, you know what, yeah, I'll help. You guys are willing to help me, so we're going to form an enormous crew, and we have to be willing to stay there and stand guard. Just the
well, what's to stop these people in power, especially ones that can own land, from just buying the land and saying, well, sorry, we're going to develop it for ourselves?
Yeah, that's where I'm at the point where it's like, yeah, we're going to have to become a lot smarter to figure out a way to fix that, to remedy that. We're going to have to say, wait a second, how'd you get this land? Who got the land before you? Because when we trace it back, it all goes back to somebody stole it, you know, from a native. So we start to say, wait a second, you don't own this land, you're a thief. You know, you money was created so people would put a price on themselves. Money, the Cree from Canada, they said it best. They said, until you cut down the last tree, catch the last fish, and poison the last river, only then will you see that you can't eat money. People have to understand that money is not, that's a receipt for gold that you can't even get. That's what money stands
for. It's an overinflated receipt from what's really being held in the banks.
It was a lie from the get. It was a lie from the beginning. Money, you know, people using the metals, even the metals. Wait a minute, you can't eat this shiny gold rock. You can't make enough clothing. You can't build. Why are you going nuts off it? The real valuable stuff is clean water, food, you know, places where you have food to grow, or if, you know, you want to eat animals, you raise them, and, you know, understanding how to live with a sustainability with the earth. What we see now happening, you can easily look further and be like, it means the destruction of human life on the planet, because Earth will survive. Earth is doing just fine. It's humans that's in trouble.
The people that are fucked. Yeah, that's a George Carlin line.
Yeah, it's very true. It's very true. So we have to, I mean, George Carlin said it best when he goes, you know, they come over here, they kill a bunch of white people in Europe, come over here, then they kill the red people, they push the Mexicans off, the brown people, enslave the black people, drop a bomb on the yellow Japanese. He goes, this place should be called, you give us a color and we'll wipe it out. Carlin said it best, man. I mean,
yeah,
it's just evil. When I hear people talk, oh, the founding fathers, I'm like, this guy's just fucking asleep, man. I don't even respond to it because they're still living in being an overprivileged citizen in America. That's why you see most people like they keep going, oh, Ron Paul, yeah, that's right. Vote for another slave master. That'll make you free. You know,
so you know what? So do you put some credence in the fact that, let me rephrase that. Do you put some stock into the Freemasons and the secret societies really governing all this, really manipulating behind the scenes?
Actually, it goes deeper than them. And this is where I lose a lot of people, is that, you know, being a guy of color in America, you know, who's not asleep, I understand it's extreme white racism. And I'm careful when I say that because people have been brought up in this immaturity that they think I'm talking to every single white person. No, I'm not. But we have to be honest. White people are more free in America than any other type of person, Spanish, Mexican, black, native, they just are. And that was the carrot to get white people to buy all the bullshit, to stand by and watch guys getting hung on apple trees, people getting pushed on reservations. Now that machine is eating them. Now there's a problem.
Well, karma. Karma does come around.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if you look at the hippies that are born into white families that hug trees, you know, and they're actually fighting for nature, that's reincarnation from the natives they killed. People think reincarnation's a lie. That's just another religious bullshit to control you. It's real. You see it and you say, holy shit, these guys are willing to die out here. Look at Julia Butterfly, climbed up the tree and lived there for 2.5 years. And the tree was 1,000 years old. I mean, just the fact that people weren't out there just camping, it's like, how do you cut down a tree that's 1,000 years old? You've got to be evil. You know, and then say, oh, no, we'll plant new ones. What, for 1,000 years? I mean, we see it, but privilege, comfort, that's what prevents it. To say, well, you know, at least I'm not like that people. Once again, Carlin said, poor people are there to scare the shit out of the middle class. To keep them in line, or you'll end up like that. So it's a cat.
Well, soon that's not going to matter since the middle class is dissolving.
No, they are, but the privilege will still be there. I mean, you got poor white people in trailer parks in Texas that I've been to that even though they're dirt poor, they're like, hey, but I'm white. I mean, Chris Rock said it best. He's like, you could be a poor white guy, and they still won't trade places with him, and he's a rich black guy. Because that privilege, man, if you guys ever looked at Tim Wise's video, Tim Wise, he's an amazing individual because he speaks about that. When I was a kid, I always wondered, how the hell do you get off a highway and it's all town right there? I said, man, that's real convenient. And I found out that they uprooted 70,000 black homes to build highways just so it'd be convenient for white people to get off and, you know, be like, oh, wow, look, the highway, we're right here. We're 10 minutes from home. And, you know, Tim Wise is a white guy. He's an amazing man. I went to see him speak. He's a good person. And this is the problem. And it's very touchy because the people who are overprivileged, you know, you can't even find the word in the dictionary. Because once again, the dictionaries, they've all been bought by Webster in 1986. So if you're going to look up words, you're going to want something that's like from 1970 or 1960. It's the new
UrbanDictionary.com.
Yeah, you know, I mean, even .com, it's all going to be censored online. You got to go to the library. That's what the internet was created for, to put it on where you can just delete it with a button. You don't got to burn the library anymore. And then Aldous Huxley took it a step deeper with what could be worse than burning books. You know what could be worse? Creating an environment where people would not want to read books. And that's
what we're at. Yeah, well, that's where you always get them by the balls. Do you want? Okay, again, we're on a Carlin rant. I mean, he said it best when he was like, you know what? You don't want citizens capable of critical thinking. That goes against the best interests of the elite. So you want to dumb them down. I mean, I'm absolutely paraphrasing, of course, but yeah.
No, absolutely, and it's great. It's good to paraphrase with that. But and you're right. With the Freemasons, you know, I just want to circle around to that. The real thing, when I look at it from over a decade of research, man, and I even was like, man, is this real? When you look at it, you look at all the religious books. I mean, I've read three versions of the Bible, the Quran, the Torah, the Bhagavad Gita, the Popol Vuh from the Mayans. And one thing they all got in common are other beings that want to control humanity. When I speak to atheists about it, they get pissed off. It's a fable. That's right. Dismiss it. You know, because if I had to be classified, somebody would classify me probably as an atheist, but definitely not a Darwinistic atheist. Because I tell them, look into Darwin. Have you ever read The Origin of Species of the Favored Races? That's the rest of the title that they had to censor. You can still find it with that title, too. Darwin was a staunch racist, just like his cousin Francis Galton, who proposed eugenics over in Europe. I mean, they were calling Irish people white chimpanzees. Native people of all lands, they called them advanced animals. A lot of atheists don't know this, but they subscribe to Darwinistic evolution, which is very much flawed. When you look at the genome and all of that, how does an ape with 48 chromosomes get super advanced to a human with 46 chromosomes? And then 46 chromosomes that kind of look like the two top chromosomes are fused. And then, you know, you look into these books that have a lot of bullshit in them, which are, you know, some are holy books, but they have this common theme of afraid of humans gaining knowledge. You eat the tree with knowledge, and hey, that's fucked up. So wait a second. So if I go to learn, you don't like me, and I'm supposed to worship you? You know, and I'm God's children. So wait, if I have children, do I want them to worship me or to love me? And then it's not just the God. In Genesis, in the Quran, you know, they say, oh, we send our slave, Muhammad, down to you. We, a faction of beings. Genesis, let us create him in our image. In the Gideons, but in the New American Christian Bible, they changed it to, and God created man in his image. Because people started getting smart and started critically thinking. And in the Torah,
blatantly hate. Let me ask you something. I want to test something. I hope you don't mind here. So, I mean, we're talking about Freemasons. We're talking about genetics, eugenics, and all that sort of thing. I just want to cut the bullshit and ask, do you believe in the whole reptilian conspiracy?
Reptilians are a part of it. You see, David Icke, Michael Sarion, a lot of these guys have pieces to the puzzle. We each have pieces to the puzzle. And if we come together, we put the puzzle together and we get a view of the picture. But a lot of us say, no, the reptilian thing, it's only the reptilian thing. The reptilian thing is definitely there, but that's not the only thing. Because you look at it, on every continent, they do have reptilian worship. I mean, in China, you're seeing them, the festivals with the dragons. King Arthur got to slay the dragon. The Hindus, the Nagas, children of the snake. The Chitahari in Africa.
Chitahari, I was about to say that.
And that's, you know, and that's on another continent. The crocodile god of Australia, Quetzalcoatl, the plume serpent. And what's so funny is it's in movies. Look at Star Wars. I forgot.
Darth Maul.
No. Darth Maul definitely there with the horns, and that's why a king wears a crown, to mimic that.
And Insidious, by the way. Insidious is another one.
Definitely. But now look at this. Remember when, I think it was the clones, the second one, where Obi-Wan is riding a plumed serpent. I was like, holy, my friend was like, man, you caught that one on the button. I said, holy shit, he's riding a fucking plumed serpent. And Quetzalcoatl was a bearded man. Obi-Wan had the beard. And then when you really look at it, and people, this is where people are like, oh, you freaking blah, blah, blah. And I say, that's not even Star Wars. That's Jew Wars. And nothing against Jewish people, but if you look at Princess
Leia.
Well,
they borrowed, like, the word Jedi actually comes, it's a Jewish word.
Well, it's Jewish, but it's also Egyptian, because the Jed is the path of ascension.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and it's also Hindu. Hindu, the Vedas, the Darth Vader. And because they've stolen a lot of stuff from the Hindu manuscripts of the Ramayana, which actually have schematics 3,000 years old, I mean, because I have a lot of family from Hinduism, of flying machines with mercury vortex engines with schematics on how to build it. That's where they got how to make the atomic bomb. And they're dealing these things, they're dealing with them. Why is it so dangerous when men work together? Right, that we the sons of the gods say, man, nothing is impossible for man now. So let us go down and crush the Tower of Babel and scatter them and make them speak in
confuse their language.
Exactly. So we're seeing this reoccurring theme of them afraid to see humanity get together. There's always throwing a wrench in the machine, and it's really, we're in a serious situation. I mean, the Hindu Bhagavad Gita, it speaks all the time. The universe is brimming with life. The solar system brimming with life. You have to be really kind of close-minded to think that alien life is going to wait for our lifetime to make contact. And also that there's not stuff out there. It's probably all over. I mean, you put a channel 2, you're seeing something, you switch it to channel 3. Channel 2 didn't go away, but when you tune into it now, you can see Channel 2, and that's something that Ikes talks about with the reptilians, and it makes sense. I mean, the whole Dracula thing, I explained it. I'm going to be giving a speech next month, hopefully here in New York, about that with the alien intervention and aliens, ancient civilizations and stuff, explaining to people, why does a king wear a crown? For mimicry. He's mimicking his overlord. And what did they call the people in London? The Lord. The Lord and the Duke. The freaking Lord. I'm just like, holy smokes. So,
hey,
yeah.
TC, do you have anything to add?
Actually, no, man. I think he's doing a great job fucking handling that shit.
I think so, man. Hey, yeah, I just... I'm enjoying this, by the way. I mean, like, I'm throwing in questions here and there, but I'm very much in. Anyways, continue, please.
Thanks, bro. I really appreciate it. I mean, I look around for conscious content because I really feel like I'm alone, man. I have a couple of friends that I build with, but it's like, it's funny because you'll meet people that are cool, and then it's either you'll find out they're religious. So that's, you know, they go as far as that. Some people will go as far as the founding fathers, and then they're like, nah, man, I ain't gonna say they're fucked up. So they only go as far as that. Then some will go as far as just the reptilians. But you meet very few people that are saying, nah, man, infinity is forever. When scientists say the beginning of time, I laugh at them. Professor Neil deGrasse Tyson here in Manhattan at the Hayden Planetarium, he's just a total house slave. I mean, they got really mad at me because I was like, look, man, You don't even know yourself. You don't know what you're talking about. I said, you're going to tell me the universe is 13 billion years old. Yeah, because you were there, right? You had the ruler to measure that. And what happened before 13 billion years? What, there was no time? Infinity is forever. It never began, and it's never going to end. And once we can comprehend infinity, people can't hold us to the bullshit. Oh, well, one God rules everything. Get the fuck out of here. One God rules everything. Well, he rules your mind. Infinity is forever. So, and it's hard to deal with. It's hard to say, man, you know what? I'm in this ocean traveling on the spaceship Earth, and I've probably lived infinite amount of lives on different planets and different dimensions. It's a beautiful thing. It makes
you... Yeah, to have something exist and not exist simultaneously, a lot of people can't wrap their minds around that.
Yeah, they really can't. And they wait for science to approve something. I told somebody, if there was a being that could emit electricity and kill you with it, I said, you know, that a couple of atheists, Darwinistic atheists, or just really close-minded atheists, because most are open-minded. But he was like, oh, what do you mean? I said, yeah, a being that emits electricity that could kill you. I said, you need science to tell you it exists. I said, but it exists right now. And he was like, what do you mean? I said, it's an electric eel. And then he thought, he said, holy shit, it is. I said, you see how closed the mind becomes when we should, you know, we shouldn't need science. When somebody says, look, man, it's a Dracula. I don't know what the fuck it was. No, you got to wait for science. I tell people, an alien ship could land outside and they'll run to the government to say, hey, can I believe it? Can I believe it? You know,
science can't explain everything because, like, in fact, TC brought to my attention. I love quoting this. Have you ever heard of the double slit experiment?
No, I haven't actually. Devil slit.
Oh, it's great. The double slit experiment. Basically, what happened was this is quantum mechanics. Scientists fired up a proton cannon. They put some protons in there, and they just fired it at a wall through a slit, and it made a straight line. And when they fired it through multiple slits, like two or three, it made straight lines all across. When they set up a machine to observe it, to record it, it all of a sudden set up, instead of doing it in straight lines, it came out in waves, and it just emitted in waves through the slit and just split off, as if, you know, like you would see, like, as if you saw a charcoal painting where it was, like, one layer was white and then it was just – or it was dark and then it was just getting lighter and lighter and lighter, et cetera. So when being observed, the particles changed. You know, matter changed into something else. But when it wasn't being observed, when it was just being shot in real time, it was just – it went back to being a slit again. So even our definition of what is matter is challenged.
Yes. Yes, exactly. The experiment does sound familiar, but I didn't recognize the double slit name. And that, yeah, that brings me to the reality. We don't know what reality really – what is reality? Anybody who's taking mushrooms or any type of hallucinogenic understands that reality, the fabric of it, is permeable. I mean, it is amazing. I mean, when I was in Amsterdam – you know, it was a beautiful experience because I understood that, wow, this mushroom is an internal, interdimensional spaceship. I mean, and people, that's why they demonize it. You know, I don't know if that's a good word, but that's why they outlaw it, because they don't want people to understand that your mind is limitless. That, mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not advocating taking drugs, but when you look at these natural plants, all indigenous people were tripping. If you ever read DMT, The Spirit Molecule by Dr. Rick Straussman, he experimented.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, it's he said people were making alien contact through fucking the ayahuasca.
Yep. Certain people that also correspond with that is like Grant Morrison. One person I know of, Aleister Crowley, he made a depiction, a picture called Lam, which is very much like a gray. Mm. And if you look up Lam on Google, you'll see what I mean.
Wow, I tell you, I've seen some stuff with Crowley. Actually, I had a book that somebody wrote. I think it was called "The Slaves Shall Serve," and it had a lot of stuff by him. He was talking about single syllable language, right? I don't know if you heard about that with him. The natives had originally had that because it's hard to lie when you speak with single syllables.
Oh,
yeah, and when you make multiple, it's like me saying something like. An easy word I could say with one syllable, but then I can complicate that same word with a similar word with, say, three or four syllables. And then you say, well, what does that word mean? And I say, oh, well, it means this. You know, it's just a sentence. It's like, well, why don't you just say it simply like that? Because English is actually, being at, you know, 1984, it is the new speak of the world. English is not more than 500 years old. It's the largest language in the world that means the less. You talk to anybody that speaks another language, and they will tell you that there are words in their language that cannot be translated into English. So English is a humongous conglomerate language that is omitting words. And when they get, and they're killing off the people that speak these other languages. I mean, you don't have nobody really speaking Apache. There's like, I think, 55 people left speaking that. Cherokee, Comanche, I mean, they're gone. You know, you're looking at the languages. So those words that we could have banished certain beings with, I mean, certain Arabs knew. You put them in crystals and gems, and people say, man, this is out of this world. But it's true. Why is gold so freaking valuable? Why are diamonds even more valuable? And then there are stones that are much more valuable than diamonds that they don't even talk about, with glowing centers. I mean, Wurzite and Lonsdaleite are harder than a diamond, and they've been found in meteorites that hit the Earth. One is like 47% harder than a diamond. The other's like 20-something percent. I mean, it's infinite. There's going to be things that are always harder. There's going to be things that are always softer, hotter, longer, shorter, and that's what comprehending infinity is about. So we should comprehend and contemplate infinity because it stretches the consciousness, which is actually exercise for the mind. And we don't really do that. That has been extinguished from grade school, to say no, learn bullshit, eat crap, inflate your ego.
Yeah, meanwhile, there are things that constantly happen within our environment that challenge those paradigms, that challenge those ways of thinking. I mean, like I said, I always bring up the double slit. That was one.
That's actually a good example. I mean, it's always going to be changing, and that's what, if you look at the Western,
well, but even ancient, like, how did, you know, like the pyramids, even though there are explanations and pretty good ones for how they got there, it's just, how could a primitive people have you know, been able to build those heavy things and build those complex structures? How could we have lost that info?
Yeah, no, well you know what, when the more research I did, I realized we didn't lose it. That the pharaohs of Egypt oppress the people so hard, they say, okay, we're going to have Greece and, you know, and Rome come and save us, right? Rome was the same bloodline of the pharaohs. And Rome started shitting on people so much, they fell. That's the same bloodline of England. You know, hemophilia is you know, that disease where, you know, your blood clotting pattern doesn't work properly. That's
right.
Blue blood. And they call royalty blue bloods. I had wrote a good passage. Yeah, about why, you know, the king needs to wear the crown, mimicry. What gives a person the right to rule? And it's specifically China, Japan, they were saying they are more closer to God than we are. That is the direct descendant of God in Korea, the one in London. And when you look, you say, well, wait a minute, who the fuck? And what it is that was the interbreeding. Because when they interbred, it was more control. To say, don't worry, they'll do our bidding for us. And you see slaughter, the giving of the knowledge of metal and fire. But look at Greek, Prometheus, who stole fire from the god and gave it to a man. And Prometheus means before thinking. You know, so they said, Zeus was in the myth, they say, no, don't take the fire back from the humans. They'll hug that flame till they're doomed. And when you put fire to anything, it makes it less. Our food, cooking the food, has enslaved us so bad. I mean, I have a hard time breaking my cooked food addiction. I break it sometimes, I go back. Wheat and bread, like in the Bible, work daily to get your daily bread. Bread is so freaking addictive, man. It should be called crack. You know, I mean... Bread, try to think of quitting eating bread, and it's not good. Bread is not good for people. You know, what's good is fresh fruits and vegetables, and it is hard to eat that all the time. And if you're going to eat animals, wild, like the natives. They said, well, why don't you just cage up the buffalo so you don't got to hunt them? And they said, well, that would desecrate the spirit of the buffalo. When we hunt the wild buffalo and eat that, we become wild and strong and free like the buffalo. And what do we all eat? Domesticated, caged animals. So now we become comfortable with living in cages and slavery. It's like, it's ingenious. It's freaking ingenious.
That's interesting. I never thought of that.
Yeah, I mean, I was writing a passage on that, and, you know, it really brought me to a lot of stuff. It brought me even deeper with the vegetarianism, because I said, look, the trees are planted in single rows. And what are you taught in kindergarten? Line up in a single file, everybody. You know, you don't have orange trees constantly growing next to orange trees. There's other bushes. Natives said that this tree will have this bush, and next to that bush grows this medicine. They say, oh, no, we're not going to have that. We're going to cut all this shit down and plant these in rows. People will stand at attention for us just like a field of wheat stands at attention in lines. And
yeah, but don't you think most of this has its roots in Egypt, just when or even beyond, just when people started realizing that they could irrigate water? Specifically, I bring up Egypt as an example because it's one of the earliest ones. But irrigating the Nile and planting seeds by the Nile and realizing, oh wait, fruit can come of this, so we better line this up and feed our tribes. I mean, wouldn't it have more?
Think that's actually correct, because it comes from the evolution theory. And they're saying, okay, this happened. And how we can combat that is when an archaeologist or a scholar says that, and you just tell them, yeah, that's right, because you lived in Egypt 5,000 years ago. They don't really know. And then Sumeria is 6,000 years old. Then they just came open with Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, which is 13,000, between 12 and 13,000 years old. It's the oldest city so far that they've openly, publicly come with. And that is a shocker. I mean, I was like, wow. And I started looking into a lot of other stuff, and I said, well, I got to keep remembering that I'm dealing with habitual liars. So everything I've been taught, everything that's in the colleges, everything they try to push is suspect. So when they say, oh, well, you know, we were hunter-gatherers, I'm not really too sure about that. You know, because when you look at the evidence, there was an evolutionary jump between Cro-Magnon, Neanderthal, and us. And then how do we explain Michael Cremo's book, Forbidden Archaeology, finding human bones anatomically correct to today in lava, frozen, you know, in the lava, 53 million years old? Darwin's talking about, you know, we dropped out of a tree 19 million years ago, and then start. It just shatters all of that.
I think it was Xenu.
It was what?
I think it was Xenu.
Xenu?
I'm kidding. It's the Scientologist god. Yeah, the alien. Yeah, I'm pulling your leg. But anyways, trying to keep the show.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me because, you see, when you wonder about it and you live life with a wonder like this, life is nothing less than wonderful. And that's what they take out of it. They say, no, don't worry about it. Say, look, I'll show you how this works. That's what modern science does. It tries to destroy the wonder of everything. You notice they're always trying to say, oh, we're gonna figure out, you know, how the human genome and life, and we'll live forever. So you won't respect your life.
That's one thing I have noticed about atheists, and that has been on my mind for quite some time, is that there is people that claim to have the answers or all the answers that rest heavily on, let's just say, empirical science. Mm-hmm. They tend to be, especially when they're confronted with death, you watch an atheist confront death, you will see their attitudes just completely shift. Whereas someone who has, like, even the slightest amount of faith, you know, can, in whatever it is, it doesn't matter what it is, but you can watch as they handle death, and they'll be calm, they'll be cool, as well as can be expected. But I've just noticed a sense of hopelessness within atheists. But what's even funny is that scientists, which atheists put a lot of stock in, they make a lot of faith-based claims too, like multiverse theory. You know, you don't see that. You know, there's not a shred of evidence that I've seen that suggests the multiverse theory is actually you know, out there, but yet a lot of scientists want to discourse about it and, you know, suggest it as a major possibility.
Hmm. I mean, with the multiverse and other theories that come in, like the parallel dimensions and stuff, what comforts me to say, okay, yeah, sure, is the saying of the universe is not as weird as we can imagine. It is weirder than we can imagine. So that's a real deep saying when we analyze it. So every single thing we can imagine is out there, plus things we cannot imagine. Alan Watts, the philosopher, made a really good thing. He said, you can imagine a dragon. He said, but do you really think you could have imagined an elephant if it didn't exist? A creature with a trunk, you know? You look at an elephant, and that's more of an odd creature than a dragon. You look at an octopus, it's like, if you never saw an octopus, you think you could have imagined that? So this
I think the biggest example of all that is the platypus.
Beautiful, beautiful example. Electric eel. You know, look, a vampire bat. Oh, there's a creature that sucks blood. Get the fuck out of it. Science said, all right, now I believe it. You know, you look at it, it's like, wow, existence is beautiful. It is actually beautiful. And then when you get into understanding that you're already immortal, man, nothing can stop you. That's why they fear the natives so much. That's why they're not here. Look, what are you talking about? We'll be back. We go into the rocks, to the trees, we'll go into your children, and you'll raise us. We are forever. You know, I remember John Trudell giving a speech, and he's just deep. He goes, I was talking with my relatives the other day, the cloud, the moon, the trees, the stars, the river, and I said, that is just deep. That is deep to know that the rock is your relative. Grandmother Moon, he said, we pray to you and for you, and we're angry at the invaders that violate your sanctity with their mechanical uncleanliness. I mean, it's native peoples of every continent make a university look like a mind-shitting institution because they say some of the deepest things. They say, oh, you think you own the land? Well, when you die, you see that the land really owns you.
I got a question for you. I got more questions. Okay, so with all of this said, you know, with all of these, this immortal karma, that sort of thing, where do you see conflict and struggle, especially like between humans? Where do you see that fitting into it? Because it's been a common theme within, the listeners of the show, let's just put it that way, the supposed, you know, the select audience, so to say, select few that listen to this show. It's been a common theme that adversarial struggle causes betterment. Now, what would you say to that?
Well, certain struggles do. I mean, it's like lifting weights. You know, you can't get bigger muscles lifting 20 pounds. You're going to have to put 30 and 40. So when the mind is put through stress and adverse times, it is forced to either get stronger or it's going to die. I mean, the old saying possibly could be true. What doesn't kill us makes us stronger. And something, and it's funny that you brought that up because I've had that feeling before, is something trying to make us stronger? Is something trying to get us ready? Is testing us? Because there is, one lady told me, she goes, this may not be a battlefield of the flesh. And I was like, you know, that's very profound because it goes much, much deeper. So these struggles that we're going through, yeah, they're going to make us stronger, or they're going to break us, or they could, you know, program us. You know, we see, I mean, why do you think they call it a television program? Because it's the program. So, yeah, I do think that, I mean, it's not even what I think, but the evidence of what we see is that when you put friction, when you put adversity, when you put, you know, something that's harder for something to get stronger, it will adapt to get stronger. So, like, it's like if you a good example is a human. If you want to get stronger, you start to do exercise and lift weights, and you will get stronger physically. It's a fact. So these mental problems, these diseases and stuff. I mean, I tell people, if diseases were that dangerous, the human race would have already been wiped out, right?
Yeah, and even diseases have to catch up with what we do. I mean, like, there are diseases that caught up with processed meat and, you know, with chickens being grouped together, you know, pigs being grouped together. You know, you got the swine flu that came out recently. You know,
and then they dump all that shit in the river. Every day, tons go into the Mississippi River. It's just sad, man. I used to tell people.
That explains Mississippi.
You know, when I talk to the vegans and vegetarians, because, you know, I don't eat meat and stuff, but I don't like to call myself a vegetarian or vegan because a lot of them are assholes. It's like a report card. Oh, I've been a vegan. Who gives a shit? Why? I used to admire intelligent people when I was younger. Now I admire kind people. Because even though somebody eats meat, that's cool. I can only meet a person where they're at. But a lot of vegans, vegetarians, same thing with the atheists, you know, some of them, atheism, veganism, that ism. They got an ism for you. You know, if you want to, if you don't want to think, oh, they got an ism for you. To be a free-thinking individual, to just a being, is kind of hard in the time of, in like the times that we're at. I mean, this might be what they called, I think the Masons call it the great work of the ages. Because the Masons are just pawns. They're pawns. And they are definitely secret society in that. Because when you look at it, Masonry deals with building in stone. And when we look at all of these structures, look at the block in Lebanon, in Baalbek. 1,100 tons. And I think there's another one that's 2,000 tons. I'm positive one that's 1,100.
I think it would be rather appropriate to mention that our main host here, TC, is a former Mason. That right, TC? Hello?
Is he there?
I guess not.
If he's a Mason, right? If you look at what David Icke's saying, and it makes sense, he says a lot of Masons don't even know what they're serving. It's like a lot of cops that think they're doing good, and then one day they might realize, wait a second, man, doing that to this person, he didn't do nothing, you know? So a lot of Masons will actually think it's not a controlling, because they never see it. They'll get to a certain level, and they'll just be used less than pawns. So unless you're ready, and this is a hard one for people to swallow, unless you're ready to start sacrificing children and giving up your own children for sacrifice, you're never going to get in there. If you ever watch a film called The Believers with Martin Sheen from 1988 or 87, it talks all about child sacrifice to gain power. Look at the fairy tale, Rumpelstiltskin, when he gave her the ability to spin gold in exchange for what? Her firstborn. What's up with this reoccurring theme of giving up your firstborn?
Have you heard a documentary called Conspiracy of Silence?
It sounds familiar, but I can't really, you know, totally pinpoint it.
Okay, that one had to do with, I believe it was Jamestown. It was a boys' school where I guess there was some elite in Washington, D.C. that was just basically using that school as a facility for child prostitution.
What, in Jamestown, Virginia?
No, it wasn't Jamestown, Virginia. It was the name of it was like Jamestown or something like that.
Oh no, I could easily believe that, because look at NAMBLA. You know about NAMBLA, right? N A B L A. The North.
Yeah, I have heard that. Yeah.
You know, I mean, and that's an open organization that was started by two priests and another guy. I mean, that's crazy. When I heard that years, I almost didn't believe it. I said, wait a second, you tell me that's real? Yeah, the North American Man Boy Lovers Association. If you look at Cupid is a little boy, because that's their ideology of perfect love, a young boy. And look at what John Allegro wrote in the Dead Sea Scrolls. When they found the Dead Sea Scrolls, he wrote a book called The Dead Sea Scrolls and the Christian Myth, I think it was. And I'm surprised they didn't lynch that guy. Because he said the scrolls were talking about the holy water is the semen, and that the most sacred place to put it is on the face of a young boy. And when you look at it, look at what a priest doing. No, rampant homosexuality and pedophilia in the media. I mean, who's that? Corey Feldman, I think his name was. He was an actor.
Corey Feldman.
One of the kids from the Goonies. He came out on camera. You might find it on YouTube, where he said his friend, Corey Feldman, was like, yo, when we were 14, you didn't help me when the producer was fucking me. And he's still pissed about that shit. And then the other guy, I forgot his name, he says, yeah, I would never let my kid go into Hollywood because of this shit he went through. And Hollywood, look at the name, comes from it really comes from Hollywood, the holy wood, the same wood that wizards used for their wand. What do you see at the movies? The stars move in a pattern like if you wave the wand. Come to Hollywood magic. Let us captivate you. Captive, you know, that mind. And it's ingenious. I mean, that screen, we got to remember, when we look at television, we're looking at a box with a flickering light, similar to a hypnotist tool.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, my phone dropped out for a second there. What I was going to add on that was that wands are also, aren't they also used in Freemasonry?
The wands, I'm not sure if they're used in the Freemasonry at a lower level. On a higher level, there's definitely some very unbelievable stuff. I mean, they didn't lose the technology from the pyramids. They didn't lose those. That's still, when you look at some of the vases from Egypt that are carved out of diorite. Now, diorite is a stone that's not too far away from the hardness of diamonds, and that's probably the only thing you can carve it with. But the fact that it's a vase, it astonishes people, because the way it's carved, you'd say, wait a second, you couldn't carve that with modern tools. So what the hell did they carve it with? I mean, you look at some of these things, and it defies, it's there. It's like science trying to explain us. And I tell them, science can't explain us, but yet we still exist.
Hmm.
It shows you, it's what I call the molasses process. Science slows it down so they can get time to catch up.
Gotcha. Oh, by the way, I've just returned inside to the chat room. I don't know where our host went, but I'm getting a lot of people in the chat room. One of them, Interrogus, says, ask him about the Druids, man, the Druids with the holy wood wand. Those are the wands were the mystical entertainers of old. I guess that's where we get the old, you know, hat and cane bit. Was from the old Druids, I guess.
I mean,
any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, some of it, the hat and cane, it goes a little further than them. But the Druids, in some texts, talk about they're the priest caste from the Celtics. The Celtics were the warriors, the Druids, because it was a caste system there, and that those people were very deep, because the Celtics and Druids would cut an animal open and throw the entrails on the ground and read it. They could read the signs, just like you have people all around the world, the pagans, the Native Americans, the Africans, that they can read, like, if a tree falls, they can look at it, just like psychics and, you know, tarot cards and all that. You can look at how it fell, and you look for what's missing, you look for what's happening, and it's an extremely close bond with nature and existence itself. The Druids had a very close bond with that, and actually the Celts were one of the very few groups that beat the Romans back many times. You know, the Germanic tribes did too. You know, so Rome couldn't go up to certain things, even with the technology of steel and all of that. The Druids had some really deep supernatural things going on. I'm not saying that they're good, not saying that they're bad, because, you know, it's still open. But it's real deep. And see, that's what Irish people and other people from northern Spain, which is basically a lot of that area, they don't want those people to know that. That's why they had to kill them off. Rome had to kill off all the white people that worshiped trees and earth and respected Mother Earth. Then Britain rose and said, look, we'll kill off all the rest. And when some of those white people escaped over here and still worship trees, they had witch hunts to finish them off and burn them. I mean, you wonder, like, why the assault on people that worship the earth, that look at, not even just worship, but look at it as our mother. because it sustains us, and Father Sky. Because people think, oh, it's just the natives and the Africans. No, there were many, many light-skinned people from Europe that were Earth people. But they knew we got to kill off the guys that look like us first, and then we'll go take care of the other motherfuckers. And you see a couple of them still alive because you can't kill a spirit. So you see it in, you know, the metaphysical stuff here, and you know, you see it all over. You got a lot of charlatans, but you have a lot of people that's still in touch with that metaphysical part of them. It goes way beyond color. I mean, that language separates us, but when they, you know, with the color, I mean, people, I tell people, no matter what their color are, say you take two black guys and two white guys.
Mm-hmm.
One has A positive, one has B positive in the white guys. And the black guys, one has A positive, one has B positive. One of the guys gets injured and he needs a blood transfusion, say the white guy. His own brother that he thinks because he's white can't give him a blood transfusion. But the black guy can because he's got the same blood type. So that tells us that there is something on the inside that connects us much more than what's on the outside. And people don't like that. This goes beyond even family, because you can have five.
Isn't that where that saying comes from? You know, blood's thicker than water or something like that?
Yeah, blood is thicker, but they think it means blood like family blood. And when you look at that, you know, blood ain't thicker than shit, because family be killing each other, you know? It means that blood is thicker. So if you and I have the same blood type, that is thicker than water, because then we're really brothers, even though you look different and I look different. And that's something that's very hard because, you know, the creation of race, the whole artificial concept when America was created, is separate. It was a masterful invention to separate us because there is no separation of race. There's the human race with many different humans. But there is something within us. Like two brothers can be born and have different blood type. So it transcends even family. Natural-born family, because he'll have the blood type of somebody that's a different color and from a different country and a different family. And it doesn't sit well with people, because it says that we are connected to more to people that don't look like us than people that do look like us. I mean, there's going to be some people that look like us that have our blood type, but there's going to be a lot more people that don't look like us that have our blood type. And it's a beautiful thing, because once we start to understand this, racism melts away. That shit melts on the ground and just evaporates. And you start to see a person for who they really are, or see a being. I don't like to use the word person because it comes from the Greek word persona, meaning mask. Once again, English, the new speak, just having us speak in terms where we don't even know what the hell we're saying.
Well, that's one thing I've heard someone within our circle say. They said that racism is a tool of religion. What do you think? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. I mean, when you look at when the Bible was printed from, I think it was German to Spanish and English and Portuguese, it was around 1330. And what, not even 100 years later, you had the onslaught of massive slavery. Something gave them the technology. Columbus had maps of the entire coast from Nova Scotia to Argentina. Of the whole east coast of the Americas, and even part of the coast of Antarctica, ice-free, and the west coast of Africa before he sailed over. And then when they say, oh, well, Columbus, I say, well, what about Leif Erikson in the year 800? What about the Roman ship? Yeah, they just found a Roman ship off the coast of Brazil from, I think, 19 AD they dated it to. And Brazil covered it back up. But you can find it on the net because Italy started popping shit about, oh, well, that's a Roman ship, so any Italian should automatically get citizenship in Brazil. They were like, oh, yeah, bury that shit. You ain't getting nothing. But the fact still remains that there's a Roman ship off the coast of Brazil. That's 2,000. Then what about the African heads in Mexico, in La Venta, that are over 8,000 years old? You look at that, you're like, you talk about transatlantic trading. You know, it gets real, real deep. And Western science and the knowledge filter with them, they don't want to let this stuff out. They'll explain that shit so technically that people will actually believe them. And you know, it brings us into the to the place we are now, you know?
Yeah, and if they repeat it often, that was also a trait that the Nazis employed. If you repeat something often, you'll eventually believe it.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you look at the Nazis, people really got mad. One of my friends, because I go, look, man, Hitler was Jewish. I thought Arnold Schwarzenegger was a Nazi. He's Jewish. There's a website called Christopher Columbus was Jewish. When you look at, there was a lot of Jewish people that brought African slaves over here. And they try to just say it was the non-Jewish white Americans or the non-Jewish white Europeans. When you look at it, the Torah, there's only two type of people according to the Torah. The children of Israel and the Gentiles. So Jews and non-Jews.
Yeah, Jews and non-Jews, exactly.
And that's, I mean, that is really a book of hate. And we're, I'm scared to even talk about it because, I mean, you say Jew and they're ready to fucking hang you. You know, it's like, you look at it, it's like, holy shit, they did commit the Holocaust. Because think about it, who gained the most from the Holocaust? Even Ariel Sharon said that if the Holocaust never happened, Israel would have never been a nation. So to say, look, we're going to kill a couple of million of our own Jews, and we're going to harp this shit forever. Fuck, you know, the natives, the Africans. No, the Jews, the 6 million Jews is what matters. Not the 300 million Africans that were slaughtered. Not the 150 million natives that were slaughtered or even more. But this, you know, we kill 6 million of our own and we make everybody feel sorry for us. And I guarantee you we'll be ruling the world within 50 years. And you look at it, what do you see? Every media, look at Rupert Murdoch, and this has nothing against all Jewish people. It's just like when somebody says, you know, white or something, you're not meaning every single person, because they're
You mean a select few.
Yeah, there's a certain few, and actually a pretty good few, but also just like the overprivileged white problem we have, you have the overprivileged Jew problem. So you're going to get that from some of the Jews that might not really know everything, but they get that privilege, so they're going to just nod in agreement with all the injustices. They're going to say, well, you know, look, they got the Jewish hospitals, the Jewish ambulances, that if you're not Jewish, they won't pick you up. That shit is almost not.
Really?
I'm like, yeah. It's all over here in Manhattan and Queens and Long Island.
Wow. Yeah, see, I'm in California right now, and I've been to New York a few times, but, you know, I haven't lived in it. Wow, that just blows my mind right there.
Yeah, it's there. I mean, I got two sisters in Cali, L.A. and San Diego, and I've been there, but it's been over a decade, but 2 decades probably. And I don't know if it's over there, but if you look, you might find it. They got the Jewish League of Hospitals, because I doubt it's just New York. I mean, I tell people, look, it's the Empire. What do you think they call it? The Empire State Building. The Empire State Building. New York comes from the York of Right in London, the New York of Right. You know, but a lot of other names of states are still native, you know, Alabama, Alaska, you know, California, you know. And it's funny that California is the native name for the western part of the continent, and which is like the sunset, and Kali is the goddess of death, of destruction in Hinduism. There's the commonality you see, and you're like, wow, this is really, it's amazing. There was a worldwide network. Eric von Daniken has some amazing research.
Let's see, I wonder, though, this brings me to question. You're saying things like Cali and California. Now, the question here that comes up in my mind is, these are two different languages. You know, Kali coming from India, California coming from...
Native language of... they're actually extinct, because they extinct, I think, over... They genocided over 60 different tribes just in northern Kali. The last one, I think there's a documentary from 1950. I think his name was The People of Ushi. So they had to get rid of them. But there could have been a common language that they both stem some from, or... the California could have actually been, you know, from India, because India has, you know, a massive amount of dialects. Sanskrit is possibly the oldest known language, which is, you know, where the Hindi and all of that come from. and you look at it and you start to say, language does have a commonality to it. I mean, isn't it funny that Arabic, Hebrew, Latin, and Greek, their common language is Phoenician. So you can trace those four languages that are practically want to rip each other apart to a common language, but Hinduism doesn't go, Hindi doesn't go to Phoenician, so that's different. Chinese doesn't go. Rongo Rongo from the Polynesian. So you have all these different dialects. Some of them go to certain groups, and some of them grow to other groups. And some of them, shit, they look like alien symbols. I mean, look at Hinduism's language. I mean, you've got these squiggly, you know, look at Cyrillic in Russian, you know, with the backwards R and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at some of these symbols, and it's really deep, man. It's definitely, you know, when you said you wonder, that made me smile, man, because now
yeah,
I know.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
living
white.
I'm always wondering. Yeah,
I'm
so
always
life,
wondering. I'm always questioning, always challenging, even if it's an authority, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
So life can be nothing less than wonderful for you, and that's a beautiful thing, man. I mean, question authority, Timothy Leary, Ram Dass said it best. Never respect authority in any way, shape, or form. At the college where they were professors to the entire freaking campus, you know, and that's, you know, to kill Timothy Leary and Ram Dass, I think his name was Rupert Albert or something. He went to India and changed his name to Ram Dass. I actually saw him speak in 2005 over here. But, you know, because I have a friend, he's a medical doctor, and he was saying when he was 19, he read the Upanishads from India, sold everything he owned, and bought a one-way ticket. Traveled for 10 years, and then, you know, he said he didn't think he was going to become a doctor. You know, and then he dropped something on me that was profound. He said, I don't know if it was Hippocrates or what, but he said, any man who doesn't become a doctor by the age of 30 is a fool. You know, and it's not to be a doctor to just go and have to help everybody, because, you know, it's good to help people. But it's to know that when something's wrong with you, you're not enslaved to a doctor, which we see happening today. If something happens,
okay.
Yeah, you know, people don't even know how to cure themselves of a freaking cold, a pneumonia, or you know, an infection or something. They're going straight to the doctor, and that's enslaved. And now they don't even got a choice. You want to go to an acupuncturist or something? You're paying out your pocket. The insurance is only covering the pharmaceutical prostitute doctors that sell their drugs and keep you a customer. It maintains the disease, but it doesn't cure it. There's a good book
right.
called The Medical Mafia.
Well, see, that's the other thing. That's one thing that I think you and I will agree upon, is that the medical world, the pharmaceutical world, they make more money off of you being sick than you being cured.
Well, look.
So I mean, like, the cure for cancer? I have seen several news documentaries come out as to they've found at least two or three different possible cures for different types. Obviously, there's a lot. There's many different types of cancer, but they found at least two or three different cures for specific ones, and each one has been systematically been suppressed.
Well, you're speaking with somebody who has personally sat in doctor's offices, and I've seen people cured of cancer. I know people that are cancer cured. I know a lady that used to own the vegetarian store. She cured herself of cancer. She did take some chemotherapy because she was saying it was shrinking the tumor, but she cured herself. Everything she sold was organic. She goes, I don't want anything that's sprayed because that's definitely causing it. And she was cured. There was two ladies at Dr. Lodi's office. They were cured by intravenous. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are cured of cancer. Dr. Samuel Epstein has a book called The Politics of Cancer Revisited. If you ever get a chance, you know, maybe you can get it free online or something. That's a really good book because that's what it is, the politics of cancer. Cancer, there's been a cure for cancer. There's a cure for everything because if there wasn't, we'd be extinct. There has to be because it would spread, it would this. Cancer is so orchestrated, It's ridiculous. You could see it straight out. It's just straight.
Then how come people like Steve Jobs, you know, like rich and famous people that have the means to buy these cures, how come they don't get them?
Oh, because he believes the bullshit that there's no cure for cancer. And then they're making sure that, nah, you ain't getting it. You'll ask for the cure and we'll give you something else. How would you know? If you're not a scientist or if you're not going to analyze